The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
A four-day week for markets with less than a week until Inauguration Day. China's imports plunge, but predict a massive rise in oil usage. Markets are consolidating, earnings starting to roll in, a free report, listener questions, and more. All this and so much more on episode number 492 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the middle of January, the 15th, 2017. This is Andrew Horowitz. I'm your host. And glad to be with you today. Glad to have the opportunity to spend some time talking about markets, economics, and all the things that are going on politically around the world, as well as a few stock tips that we're going to talk about today, some idea generation, how we get there. We were supposed to have Harry Dent on this week, but he postponed until next week, which is okay. Gives us some more time to prepare. I actually finished his book. He has a new book out called The Sale of a Lifetime: How the Great Bubble Burst of 2017 through 2019 Can Make You Rich. I finished it. I dog-eared all sorts of pages in getting ready in preparation for his interview. Now, he's been on the show many times as a guest since, I guess, 2007 or 2008. His last time on the show was 2014. Now, Harry has, on a regular occasion, and almost always, I should say, had bold predictions. Now, he's not always right on his timing, but his insight, I got to tell you, his insight is pretty invaluable when we look at things like his demographic trends and what's going on in terms of global economics and the forward look, the outlook for what's happening, not only on an economic basis, but on a cyclical basis. He has a lot of cycles he uses. Now, again, timing is really interesting because there's things that come into play. So, for example, well, he maybe in the past have predicted that gold would be crashing or the markets would be crashing or something's always crashing. But then you have the central banks of the world stepping in and stopping that, kind of putting their fingers in the dam and stopping all of the leakage and trying to rebuild the economy. Now, that's some of the basis of what he's talking about here, how that's ending, and there's a lack of, I guess, confidence with the central banks. But more so, he talks a lot about this whole idea of multiple cycles that are all starting to come together at the same time. And he talks about, he's got a lot of them. Back of the book, he talks about things like the human sexual response cycle, the 8-13-year boom-bust cycle, deals with sunspots, 30-year commodity cycle, 34 to 36-year geopolitical cycle, the 39-year generational spending wave, and goes on and on with about 8 or 10 more cycles that are spanned out over a greater period of time. And he talks about how many of these are starting to now all of a sudden come together. We'll talk about this on the next show, but I thought it was also a good opportunity for you to ask him questions as well. And how do you do that? Well, just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and just ask a question, and I will get them on the show and ask Harry directly for his thoughts. This way we have full interaction. Not only me asking questions, not only Harry answering my questions, but looking out to what you have to say as well. So just go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll also mention that, wow, we had some great feedback on last week's guest, John Williams. He's with shadowstats.com. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that show, if you haven't had a chance to listen to what he is talking about in terms of his alternative statistics, or maybe as he sees it, his statistics compared to the alternative statistics that the government is putting out. That's probably a better way to look at it from John Williams' standpoint. Great episode. He talks about the economic reports that are coming out in terms of inflation and employment and how a lot of those numbers over the years in terms of the statistical calculation of the final results from all of these reports have been changed and why they look like they do today. And it gives an incredible detail and a rather persuasive discussion as to what the economy really looks like today in his words, his thoughts from his statistics. And he's been doing this for a long time. So I got to tell you something. If you hadn't had a chance to look at that, go over to the site, click it, download it, go to iTunes, go to Google Play, go to Stitcher, wherever that you listen to this show, and make sure to listen to that episode. I think it was probably one of the best. We got, tons of listener feedback on that and saying how it was one of the best shows in a long time. So thank you so much for your feedback on that. And we'll get some more questions and some comments and some discussion from you as well. And again, you could just easily go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and click on the Ask Andrew button, and I'll get that directly. So what else is happening here? Well, we have earnings season. That's underway. Last week, at the end of the week, we saw several banks reporting earnings. We saw Bank of America, Citigroup, and a couple of other key banks reporting. And generally, the reports were okay. Some had a revenue miss. Some had a very substantial surprise to the upside when it came to their earnings per share. Some of that could be due to a lot of different things. Yes, it could be due to the widening yield curve. It could be due to the stock buybacks that are going on. But still, it seems that there's a great deal of optimism about the future that's priced into many of these stocks, the opportunity for the yield curve that is going to be continuing to widen over time. We're going to get to my comments on that, as well as a clip that I picked up from Larry Fink, who is the CEO of BlackRock, and his thoughts, which I thought was really, it's short, but it's insightful into what I think a lot of people are thinking right now and what markets are predicting and how markets are reacting at this point. Before we do that, let's get to some of the economics from the week. We saw that retail sales rose 0.6%. And much of the gain in December's retail sales can be pretty much dead on attributed to increased car buying and gasoline. Otherwise, if you take out that, those two particular categories, it was like no gain, which is really interesting since we have such a high level of consumer confidence and there's been this amazing turn since November in what the outlook is and the level of comfort that people have for the future. But yet, all right, they're buying some gas, which, okay, that has to happen. And they're buying cars. Okay, great. A lot of incentives there. But what happened to the rest of the industry? When you look at a survey that was recently done by most analysts, they expected a bit higher level overall. But the Census Bureau data showed that online sales, which we knew about, had jumped tremendously in 2016, up about 13.5%. However, department store sales fell about 8.5%. And we're seeing that very clearly with store closures. We're seeing that with all of the information that we're seeing about many of the big box retailers. So very interesting statistics that are going on right now. Now, what about that consumer confidence level? We saw that the University of Michigan's preliminary January consumer sentiment index was pretty much unchanged from the final December reading that was out at about 98.1. In January, it was about 92 and change, but so it dropped a little bit. But the current conditions component of the index reached 112.5, the highest mark since 2004. So not only are we seeing that there is a significant rise in the outward confidence for consumers, but also their current situation, people are saying, you know, things are good. But again, that doesn't really relate back to what we're seeing in retail. In terms of inflation, this was one of the head scratchers, or maybe one of the areas that there has been some concern that there is some inflation creeping back into the system. We know that there has been somewhat of a change of the dynamic when it comes to the overall prices of goods. And some of that is in, of course, gasoline prices. And some of that we've seen in healthcare and costs overall. But we are seeing that the PPI, the producer price increase, which is the amount that is looked at from the manufacturing area, it has moved up again in November. And from November, which was 0.4 plus 3.3 in December. And now there's a concern that there may be some inflation that is starting to start ticking higher. It's not at a level that's really concerning right now by any means, but it's starting to show up a little bit here. And that's something that we have been looking at as beneficial. Remember that if we have a deflationary market or even a stagnant inflation area, you know, reading for some time, people aren't going to be incentivized to do anything quickly. Of course, too much inflation poses a very significant problem, but not as much as I could see it as a deflationary or a stagnant low-level inflation level, because what happens there is that people are just, well, they're not motivated. They're not interested in doing anything that would really show that they're going to move quickly to buy something, get something done, get some loans locked in at this point, expand quickly to keep up with things. So what's happening is that we are starting to see the beginnings of some inflation creeping in and possibly the velocity of money, which is an important mechanism of supercharging an economy, or at least moving an economy forward when you have the money moving through the system, which has been kind of stuck for some time. And as interest rates move up, people become very much more interested in saying, you know what, I better do this now. Think about your own situation. You know, if interest rates are low, you know, I'm not going to refinance yet. Maybe they'll come down a little bit. But you know, once you see that interest rate move, what do? You know what, maybe I better buy that house now before things move too quickly. Maybe I better refinance right now. Maybe I better take that loan out right now, lock it in right now. So there is this, I think, double-edged sword when it comes to inflation. On one hand, you don't want to have runaway inflation, of course, but a little bit of inflation, a little kind of a, just a little flavoring in the economy is actually a good thing. Now, in general, for the week, what happened with stocks? Well, the NASDAQ did move higher, reached a record, as a matter of fact, up about 1%, but the Dow Jones and the S&P were down. The Dow Jones was down about 0.4%, the S&P down just slightly to down 0.1%. It's an even. And what do we have coming up? Well, we do know that on Monday, markets are closed in observance of the Martin Luther King holiday. So both stocks and bond markets will both be closed in the U.S., but overseas, they'll be open for business. We do have some earnings that are coming out that are important. On Tuesday, Morgan Stanley and United Healthcare announce earnings. Now, we have more banks coming in, but some of these healthcare companies can be very interesting to see what the effect, if any, their pulling out or discontinuation of the their plans in various states that have been, that they recently pulled out of the Affordable Care Act are going to have, and how the continuation of the rhetoric of pretty much canceling, I don't know how to say it, without any replacement of the quote-unquote Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is going to play out on many of these companies, what their outlook is going to be, what their commentary is going to be, and how that's really going to affect them. It's going to be a disaster. Let's put it this way. I mean, we know what how difficult it was to get it into place, and now that it's in there, you have, you know, tens of millions of people that are now insured on this, and you just, from what I can see, there's no alternative plan if you actually repeal Obamacare. That's a story for another show, but I really don't understand where they're going with this at this time, because it would seem that you'd want to have a, not just, oh, we hate this, so we're just going to take it away. I mean, okay, fine. I get that. If the Republicans and Congress and people don't like this plan, okay, well, what are we doing otherwise? Problem is that this doesn't seem to be a viable plan, at least from what's being presented at this point, that is going to be put in place. On Wednesday, we have more Fed talk. Janet Yellen's going to be talking about monetary policy goals And we're going to see the December CPI, the Consumer Price Index, or the inflation at the consumer level come out. That's going to be interesting to watch from the perspective of the dollar and for bonds. And a new Fed beige book is going to come out, which pretty much I'm sure we'll see the same thing as we've been seeing for some time, which is growth has been moderate to beneficial in some areas, a little slow in others. So it'd be kind of a neutral. This is the Fed puts this out from all their districts. Now we're going to have earnings from several companies on Thursday from Charles Schwab, Citigroup. We're going to have, actually, Citigroup's coming out next week, isn't it? Yeah, I mentioned they came out. It was Bank of America last week and a few others, JP Morgan, actually, on Friday. Sorry about that. We're also going to be seeing Netflix and Alaska Air, American Express, IBM. And then we're going to have new data on initial claims, housing starts, building permits. Now, Janet Yellen is going to be talking again the next day. And then we have Friday, which is Inauguration Day, where federal offices in Washington, D.C. and other areas are closed. Wall Street's going to be open for business. We're going to see GE, Schlumberger, SunTrust Banks provide their earnings. So a busy week overall, a short week. And then the following week, we're going to start seeing a barrage of earnings coming in. And one of the things I mentioned earlier, and I've mentioned in past episodes, is this whole concept of, you know, markets having a tremendous amount of expectation for what's going to possibly be with the fiscal spending initiatives that are, or better said, the campaign promises for fiscal spending that's going to be coming in, hopefully in 2017. Now, a lot of people are thinking, wow, we get this whole, we get a new president and right away we're going to get, bam, all these things. We're going to get tax reform. It's going to happen right away. We're going to get, fiscal spending on just infrastructure plans. We're going to get regulatory reform, maybe even repatriation of assets from companies that hold them overseas. Oh, okay. But I'm not quite sure about that. Some of the things may have to be compromised in order to get them into law. But these tax benefits and the job growth and all these campaign promises, I question, first of all, how fast they're going to actually get into place. And then from there, how fast they will actually be able to trickle down into the economy and into earnings. And we can see that the markets are very focused on this right now. So what we started post-election was a period of enthusiasm and euphoria in which we saw that there was a substantial opportunity for many of these things to benefit stocks and companies and individuals and the economy. But even last week when we saw that President-elect Trump had his first press conference in some time, I mean, he opened it up with, we're going to have the greatest inaugural party ever. Things are shaping up, great bands and all that. And that didn't really impress investors. But more importantly, there was very little insight or any clarification or detail on the plans for any of his fiscal stimulus initiatives. And markets are really looking for detail at this point. They want to know, okay, tell me a little bit more. We're getting close to the time when you're going to go in and do something and actually implement some of these plans, or at least present some of these plans to get them into the process so that they can be passed by Congress, et cetera. Where are we? And markets are definitely looking for detail now, hoping in the best of all worlds that every single campaign promise can be realized to their fullest. But we know that there's quite a bit of froth in the markets right now. We can easily see this from relative PE ratios overall, not every stock, but as a market in general. We could see this by the CAPE or the Shiller PE ratio that looks at a longer term averaging of PE over time. We've discussed this before. I've had some charts up as well. And we recently published our latest economic commentary and review that talked about some of this and really detailed not only the plans of what's going to be on the table in terms of some of the tax plan, but also we talked about, for example, in this particular commentary, the currency impact was going on with the dollar, why markets moved higher after Trump's win, and how most analysts were wrong. A really good detail of and really this is taken from Trump's website as well as speeches and other areas of his 100-day action plan, the potential benefits for all of us, you and me, on tax reform and a lot more. And you can get this actually right now if you want to download this free report over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go to the show notes, the detail page of this episode, episode number 492. And there's a way to download that very easily. You can grab that. This is something that we provide for our clients. And sometimes we actually will just let this out to everybody else. But this is primarily something that we write as a research piece, a thought-provoking piece internally so that we can really gauge what's going on and set up our client portfolios correctly for the foreseeable future. So we do that primarily for our global allocations, but also when we're looking at shorter-term situations like the TDI managed growth strategy. So by the way, if you're interested in any of that also, there's plenty of detail on all the strategies, how we manage money, what we do, and maybe, I'm just saying, just maybe, it's time that you start thinking about, well, what do I do with my money at this point? Is it something that I should be doing differently? And if so, how? Should I be managing? Or maybe should I think about putting some professional management on this, at least to give me some ideas of what's going on into the future. And as we are reaching, as I see it, a major inflection point for markets, where do we go from here? And how do we make those changes that may be very beneficial? Or said another way, in the event that we do have a significant market, a change in the market backdrop due to the fact that possibly investors are looking at this entire situation as a cup or a glass that is full, not partially, but full, as I'll talk about in a second. Is there some ways for me to protect myself and how do I do so? Well, that's some of the things we do here at Horowitz & Company. We look at protection mechanisms. We look at diversification of the portfolio to make sure that it is set up right within the parameters of where we see things going over the near and mid-term and our outlook. So some of that's detailed, not the portfolios, but some of our thinking, very general thinking of where things are right now and what's happening. Before we get into a little bit of a taste of what I wrote about, and we'll do that in a second, I wanted to play this clip from Larry Fink of BlackRock, which I mentioned a moment ago. He was on CNBC and he talked about a variety of things, but here was something that I really thought was very interesting.
It has rallied quite considerably. We have high expectations with the Trump President Trump's elect's administration to effectuate some of the policies that he is going to set forth, whether it's tax policy or infrastructure. It always takes longer and more difficult to roll out.
So that was interesting, right? So he talks about how it takes a lot longer to roll out. I think that's the reality that people need to get to, because right now what we're seeing is that there's this thought that once something is actually talked about, it's going to be. And then from when it actually gets implemented, well, it's going to be happening right then. But think about that. When you think about all the different things that could be coming from the aspect of, let's talk about infrastructure development, fixing bridges, fixing roads, maybe doing a lot of work for buildings, and just really a tremendous amount of work when it comes to hiring people to do all this. Think about the time span from, okay, money's available. We want to do this. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is we want to repair the bridges. Well, then you have to go to, okay, well, what bridges? So you get the bridges and you say, okay, we're going to divvy out this much to the states to, you know, hire, to do plans, to get this under works. Well, from there, you have to then go to the engineering and you have to go to the structural detail of what you're doing and how long is that going to actually take. Now, some of those things may actually already be in place, you know, as something that would be hoped for the future. So you can roll out some of those plans and you can look at those and then you have to go through the process. But again, how long is that going to take? Months to actually get things working? We're talking about government here, right? I mean, this is not a quick process. Are you going to do it with, you know, private firms, maybe a little bit faster, but still it's going to take months in order to get this rolling. And from there, you have to realize that there, if you haven't had something identified, the plans drawn, the process done, the traffic patterns or the changes in the flow of whatever it is that you're doing in terms of the building and construction, getting the various cranes and bulldozers and materials and all the things together, it's not an overnight process. So take a company like Caterpillar as a good example that has really rallied up significantly since a lot of these ideas have come into the consciousness of investors. And think about, number one, are we really going to need that many more of Caterpillar's new products to sell to the various areas that are going to be involved in any of this building and construction and infrastructure change and development? And or are we going to use some of the ones that are currently in existence? Has that been something that's been overdone? Maybe. But if we do need some of these products, how long is it going to take until the plan is, until the law is passed, until the money is then freed up and distributed? The plans are authorized and approved or drawn up and then gone through the process of the approval process. And then until actually digging, quote unquote, you remember the term shovel ready, becomes a reality. It's going to take some time. But investors are not waiting. They're all in. They're there.
I don't see as much transformation in regulation. And in fact, I think banks are going to be in very good shape going forward, even only with a modest change of regulation. The yield curve is going to be much deeper.
The intimation, though, from what you're saying is that you think the market's overshot.
Andrew, I can't say that. I could assert that if the rollout of some of these growth initiative programs by President-elect Trump are slower, if they're less ambitious, then I think the market's ahead of itself.
Yeah, so what he's talking about here is that how investors have been very excited and going after, you know, the thought that everything is going to be implemented, everything is going to play out. We're going to see this wonderful opportunity. And he's concerned about the fact that, well, you know, there's going to be possibility of some compromise. But let's hear what he talks about the other side of the deficit.
If some of these programs actually create a higher deficit in the short run, which they may do, if we have greater tension with some of our trading partners who buy our debt, we would see higher interest rates faster, which will stall out the economy, which will stall out our equity markets. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't want that to happen. I'm just trying to say I could paint a very bullish scenario or I could paint a pretty negative scenario. We don't have enough information. Right.
So he's hedging himself, you know, saying that, well, maybe this will happen, maybe this won't happen, and, you know, maybe we'll see a little bit of the potential for a higher interest rate environment, which will do better for some things like, for example, the banks and the financial services sector. But there's a big question that still has to be answered in terms of, is this something that we're going to see in its totality or maybe even better? You know, there's a possibility things will be better than the campaign promises. But let me tell you a little bit about what I had talked about and kind of read to you just a quick taste of what we wrote about when it comes to this, which I think mirrors some of the things that Larry Fink was talking about on Friday. Again, you can download this over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com, this show episode. And in this one area of this piece, I wrote that markets are now seeing the glass as completely full, not half full and not almost full. Equity markets in the U.S. are priced to perfection, and that may be something to be carefully considered. Even if all the plans and promises are fully enacted, the potential for a significant rise in inflation can cause the Fed to step up their rate hike plans. And this could curtail things like loans and offset some of the benefits from a tax cut. But for now, it's a game of wait and see until after the inauguration. A close watch on how markets react to any economic initiatives that may come out of Washington during the coming months should provide some insight. It will also be of interest to see how individual stocks react to the upcoming earnings and management's outlook regarding governmental policies. The bottom line is that the very notion of a change has been very well received by investors. Confidence is up and sentiment has been boosted. The proof will be in the pudding as we all watch the daily episode of this reality show over the next 4 years. And if promises can be matched with definitive actions. Kind of, I think that's pretty much what Larry Fink, who I respect, pretty smart guy, what he was saying as well. But there's a lot more detail that goes into this and something that you can read about and look at. More importantly, the 100-day plan, what the tax plan is looking like, what some of the things that are going to be, if this aggressive 100-day fiscal plan is successful, what it will yield. So you can get that over on the disciplinedinvestor.com. All right, let's see what else we got here. Let's talk about some listener questions. Then I want to talk about some stock ideas and how a trading idea is born. But let me see if I can get to some listener questions here. There's a question from Evan Warren. He talked about how he appreciates the podcast and looking at some guest opportunities. He's also mentioned that he's halfway through Das's book. And there are various quotes in there, he says, and since he's been promoting his book, it could be interesting. He says that my question is about what an investor in their early 30s should do. You probably have addressed it, but maybe I missed it. After funding my 401k, I don't have a lot of money left over. I don't have enough to save to invest with portfolio managers. Before I get to a level where I can have someone else invest me, what do you recommend? Well, you know, this may sound really boring, Evan, and this may be something that is like, ugh, that's not a great answer. But there's something to be said about having a stock of money, an amount of funds that you're building. Really, you have to make money with all of your money. Well, there's something about safety, and they call that an emergency fund. Having money in the event that you need a new roof, or you have some issue with your car, you have something going on with your house, you have a new kid that comes on, you're going to save then and switch over from maybe funding your retirement or funding your short-term investing programs to maybe some college education. So Evan, there's a lot of things that can happen in life. And as an early, as a young person in their early 30s, there's nothing wrong with starting to continue your savings and investing in a plain Jane, boring money market investment or some other alternative savings plan till you can actually amass enough money with a level of confidence and security that you have enough money then to put into an investment and you know what's happening in the future. And as well to think about using that money as something where you're not going to touch it, because investments can obviously have a lot of variability and movement, and you don't want to have a situation where you say, oh, I invested this money. Oh, it's down. I need to take it out right now because fill in the blank. Now that may seem really boring. That may seem like, ugh, I could have thought of that, but that's really the case. I really believe that there is something to be said about having just a block of money, especially when you're young, especially when you're starting out, that maybe doesn't have to be necessarily invested. Don't feel forced to invest on something. I got an interesting, I asked for some comments, and there was a few that came in about Trump's tweets. And Dave Hoppin writes, breaking news, Trump tweets. Yeah, no question about that. My comments, your question on feeling toward president-elect tweeting. Remember I asked about how we felt if this is something that is professional and presidential or something that's concerning. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it possibly going to be hurting our national security? Is it something that's going to continue? You know, what kind of feeling do you get out of this? So he writes, personally, I'm torn. On the first place, I understand that security risk and the effect of he has and would cause to take the side of not tweeting. On the other hand, as a citizen, I love the tweets. I want to hear what the president has to say over the edited and professionally written scripts we are used to. Only time will tell. New territory. Thank you. Let's see what else we got here. We got, okay, so Andreas Ochoa writes to me. He says, Andrew, what are your preferred metrics to evaluating the leverage of a company? What seems to have worked for you? Now, this is an interesting question because there's really no one particular measure, ratio to look at, because there are many different companies that we're looking at. So, for example, we have some companies that are leveraged in a big way because that is what their business is based on. You know, look at, for example, a good example would probably be home builders. Home builders, you would expect to have a much higher amount of debt because they use that for short-term projects or even midterm projects to build. They pay it off, they do it again, and they may even increase it over time because they can leverage the opportunity, especially if they're in the rental business or in the apartment business, or they keep on rolling it over to build new properties in order to fund their process. And then there's other companies. Well, there used to be other companies like technology shares, which didn't use any debt to speak of. They had enough money coming in through either the original share offering or from revenue streams. That's changed a bit. But I'll give you a couple of things to look at that may be interesting to look at. And what I would do is, and this is probably the most important point when it comes to debt, look at this on a sector basis relational calculation. So in other words, let's say we want to look at, we'll go back to technology for a second. You want to look at technology shares and you want to look at what the debt ratio, which I'm going to talk to you in a second, is compared to others in their same sector. If you start comparing the debt of technology and their ratios to utilities or real estate or REITs or possibly even, you know, looking at healthcare companies, it may not make any sense. It doesn't have any real substantial benefit to look at those. So you want to look at things like debt to equity. This I like because debt to equity shows me how much debt the company has outstanding as opposed to the equity in the company to see, you know, what that blend is. Again, do this on a sector to sector basis. It's only one metric, but pretty much one of the better ones to look at how the company is capitalized. You also want to know what the costs are, though, to paying the debt service. So one of the things you look at is, okay, we have this much debt outstanding. What is the, you know, revenue that's coming in from the company, the net income coming in to the debt service? And is that something that is that we could look at as that they can easily pay their debt? And you can put that into a ratio. Net income to debt service is pretty much the ratio you can look there. And also look at the quick ratio. This is paying off their current bills and current expenses. This is something that you could look at for many companies and look at as a way of if there is the ability for the company to be paying their, not only their debt, but their other expenses. And the quick ratio can give you some insight into that. But again, when you look at this, you have to do an apples to apples comparison. So if you see a company that is debt ridden and has too much debt, but then you're like, oh, but look at this other one. It looks great, but it's in a totally different sector, totally different way of doing business. That doesn't make any sense. So great question. By the way, you can ask questions over on Ask Andrew on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. Andrew Horowitz is the Twitter handle. So you can follow some of the things that we talk about there. Last question is from, let's see how we're going to pronunciation here. Jason Mamalukas. Mamalauka. Anyway, he says, to follow the mantra of buy low and sell high, and with the market at all-time highs, would now be a good time to transfer my 401k holdings out of stocks, wait for a market correction, then buy back in? And if so, would I move into bonds? I keep hearing the bond market is underperforming. Thanks for your insight, Jason. Well, that's a great question. You know, 401ks are the concept of a 401k or even an IRA, pension plan, whatever you want to call it, the long-term money in our portfolio. I don't know necessarily if it's meant to be trying to market time. And by the way, Jason, I'm gonna hit this right at you. I'm gonna direct this right to you. How good is your market timing? You know, we could have said a few months ago that markets looked pretty high, but they went higher for a variety of reasons. And if in fact markets do in fact come down, are you going to say they should come down more? Then I'm going to buy in. In other words, what are your market timing signals that you're using to give you the thought that you actually can do well? Because most market timers are pretty good, I would say, over their career of a 25 or 30 year period, once or twice. With market timing, while it's difficult and can be done, you can get on trends. There's a lot more that goes on into, you know, market timing in and out is hard. Trend following and overbought, oversold, that's an interesting way to play. That we do that with our arrow strategy, by the way. But straight up market timing with your 401k plan, if you are concerned and you look at the data objectively and you say, you know, stocks are maybe too highly valuated here in the U.S. right now. As an example, I'm just playing this out with you as a total hypothetical here, okay? Markets are priced a little bit too high. And, you know, I'm thinking that, well, some bonds are a little bit pricey as well. Maybe what you do is you start just taking some off the top and looking to rebalance into sectors or into areas around the world or to other opportunities within your 401k plan that maybe are undervalued. Now, one of the problems you have is with many 401k plans, there's not a lot of options, right? You have a select list of, I don't know, 15, 20. Some 401ks have an unlimited amount of options, but you have to be careful because if you don't have all the options, you can't find what may be the most undervalued of the lot. And therefore, you're going to be stuck with a very select group of, you know, of positions in oftentimes mutual funds that maybe aren't going to give you the opportunity that you want. So what I would say to you is that while we do like bonds on the short-term basis, short maturities, floating rate bonds, you know, I'd be very careful when it came to looking at just trying to time the market at this point, especially if, is the market going to be higher in 30 years from now? I don't know. Maybe you have 30 years to go. If it is, I'm not sure what you're worrying about at this point, besides the mental pain of all of this, which is problematic. So just keep that in mind. Anybody can write me questions. Anybody can get your information on the show. By the way, we're coming up with our 500th show in a couple of months. I'm going to try to do something special for that. And so listen into some opportunities that you may have as listeners to participate in that. Our 500th show. Think about that. It's about 10 years we've been doing this. One of the original, you know, this is one of the original financial podcasts that were out there on iTunes. Before podcasts, when you said, well, what's a podcast? Now it's a everyday term. People know what it is. Before we knew what really a podcast was, we started. Started slowly, small, short, a few guests here and there. And then it just blossomed because of you. Because of your listening and telling your friends, and I appreciate that. Keep doing it. Spread the word. Follow me on Twitter. Get your friends to follow. Get your friends to listen. Send them a link this week. Send them a link of last week's. Say, hey, take a listen to this. See if you like it. You'd be doing them a favor. Well, I mentioned that we are going to talk about something interesting, how a trading idea is born. I'm going to give you two examples here of something that happened over the last few weeks in order to give you some thought on how you could do the same thing. How sometimes the very obvious, some of the things that we do on a daily basis can actually turn into an interesting stock opportunity, a way to profit on something. You know, I mean, listen, Peter Lynch way back when says, you know, buy what you know. You have Netflix, buy Netflix. You know, you shop over at Bed Bath Beyond all the time. You love the store, buy that or whatever it may be. Okay. That's one way, clearly. And then now they're starting to talk about that. Don't buy what you know. I mean, you love Nike. Well, the stock's not doing so well. Netflix, yeah, doing great. We all use Google. That would have been great also. Buy Facebook, great. But you love Twitter? Well, not so good. So maybe you got to be questioning what it is because you have to look beyond just what our interests are into more of what the fundamentals are. But I want to talk about something that happened last week. And this is an idea right now. This is not something we're investing in yet. This is not something we are going to initiate just now. Just an idea until we can research all the different components and really if it makes any sense because we're starting from an idea. Just an idea. And then we'll go from there. So here's the setup. I was waiting at a hotel for an Uber to pick me up. And right as I was waiting, an armored car rolled up. And I started thinking about that. Huh, armored car, what do? Well, they pick up cash, they do a variety of other things, you know, maybe pick up jewelry or any other kind of important documents and store them and then deliver them and maybe put them in a safe and maybe even bring cash. And, you know, they're running things around that are very valuable. That's the whole point, right? So I was also thinking that's kind of like an old technology, right? In a world where we have digital money and we don't even have that much faxing going on. We have everything's digital and things can be moved around very easily. Not documents can, money can, maybe not jewelry, gold, things of that of, you know, that are, that have the requirement to actually get the particular component, or you know, if it's a hard asset into somebody's hands. But generally speaking, kind of an old technology, this whole armored car thing, right? Then I thought, started thinking about this recent conversation that has been brought about and what happened in India with the confiscation of paper money and the suggestion by many economists, or some economists, that the removal of paper money and certain coins from an economy can actually help that economy. Now, I'm not making a judgment of whether or not I agree with that right now, but this is a suggestion that's going on, and we see that there is some talk about it in Europe with some of the euro notes. We're talking about it also, we know for a fact, is going on in India. And I started thinking about, well, what companies will benefit and what companies will come under pressure from something like this? You know, if we actually remove currency from the economy, remove the paper. Well, the obvious benefactors, companies like PayPal, which we know, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, okay, those are all good. Those will definitely and have seen a significant upsurge in use, and the stocks are doing very well. And I started thinking about, well, what companies wouldn't do so well? And then right in front of me, it was right there, companies like Brinks, symbol BRK. Why? Well, if we don't have as much paper money flowing through the system, and there won't be a requirement to pick it up at the various places and then deliver it somewhere else. And if, in fact, you go to its fullest, where there won't be any paper money at all, no coins at all, well, Brinks still has other aspects to his business, but there's also competition. There's a variety of other armored car companies, but Brinks, they're publicly traded. And is there a short opportunity setting up for that company? So we're going to look into that again, just the, you know, how a trading idea is born and where we go from there. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to look at the fundamentals of the company. We're going to look at what the business segments of the company are, what is happening within those business segments and how they have been doing of late, how they have been progressing over the last several years, maybe some of the new segments, because the company's not going to be stupid. If they're going to see this as well. They're not going to let themselves become extinct and just stand by. They're going to try to figure out ways that they can get their business into other areas. Let me give you another example, a little bit more, in a way, obvious, a little bit more of something that is a short term, not a long term. And it was, this example was, came to me through a variety of tweets. And I tweeted this out actually once we came to our decision about what we're going to do about this. But over the last several weeks, maybe months, President-elect Trump had been talking about nuclear armament and how we may enter back into a defensive posture with nuclear capabilities. Remember that whole discussion? Kind of frightening. And how also we've been thinking about the global move towards potentially nuclear energy sources, alternatives from nuclear power. Put this together, start thinking, you know, people better start thinking about uranium plays, uranium companies, uranium usage. So we got some of the thought about, okay, well, alternative energies and also this nuclear armament. Now, how much uranium is going to be needed for nuclear armament, I don't know. But it was, again, it was out there. The whole concept was out there. We started looking at where is the best place to initiate some of this. And there was a variety of companies that were out there. Some were, you know, had a uranium component like a Rio Tinto. Then there was other plays that really had poor fundamentals. Then we focused in on Cameco, symbol CCJ. It's pretty much a pure play in uranium mining, development, and refining and everything uranium. And we looked at the chart and we said, you know, well, if this thing starts to move above and break out above the $10.50 level, there's going to be a buy here. From all the things that we're seeing, the momentum that's starting to come in, we looked at a variety of our indicators that we write on trigger charts for TradeStation, which gives us some very key trending as well as support and resistance levels. And 1050 was clearly an area that was going to be very important. If the stock could break above that, then there was a potential for an upside move on it. Now, there was other stocks like a company, Uranium Resources, URRE. But again, the fundamentals weren't that good. It had a lot of short interest, but okay, that was fine. It could be a good play, but it was a very low call. It was like a dollar and change. So we said, you know what? We're going to look at Kimiko. So we bought Kimiko for client portfolios right on the break of 1050. And lo and behold, the next several days, it went up to about 1310, hit the resistance level that we were looking at. That was the exact break and the exact level of extension that we saw could be very beneficial. And we sold it for about a 25% gain over, I don't know, 4 days. It happened to work out just right with this break. Uranium Resources probably went up like 80% in that period of time. But again, it's a much smaller stock, much more volatile. Very happy with the analysis of the trading idea that was born out of some of the things that were happening, put it all together, looked at the fundamentals, looked at the technicals. So again, something that you can use. We actually tweeted this. Hopefully a lot of you picked up on the Kimiko opportunity. And if you hadn't, maybe because you're not following us, go over to Twitter and follow us. Andrew Horowitz, one simple word, is our Twitter handle. We're not going to put up all of our ideas up there because those are held for our clients over on the TDI Managed Growth Strategy or any of the other strategies that we work on. But this one was kind of a cool one that we thought really could be beneficial. And, you know, hopefully you hopped on board. But anyway, think about that. As you are going through your day, as you're going through reading the news, as you're going through, you know, just kind of driving out there and looking around, shopping or whatever you're doing, take some of the time to notice what's going on around you. Then just file it away. Put it as a mental note. And maybe when you see the next opportunity come up that is all of a sudden related to it, a bell will go off and you'll say, you know what? Hey, put these all together. Let me look further into this sector, this stock, this opportunity. Do your research, do your fundamental research, do your technical research. And then from there, maybe there's an opportunity where you can make a couple of bucks on that opportunity. But that's how, you know, some of these things are derived as you go, as opposed to just listening to somebody talking on the, TV and saying, oh, I like this stock or that stock. And then you just buy it. Look for opportunities on your own. Get, you know, really sharpen your saw to the opportunities that are out there and develop a way of doing your own observational research and figuring out what may be an opportunity in the future. Anyway, we're going to end it there. Thanks for joining me. Of course, go over to the site. As I mentioned, you get that free report. You can ask me questions on the Ask Andrew portion at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Stay tuned for next week when Harry Dent is here, and you can ask him questions by the same process as we just mentioned. And if you haven't done so already, go over to the website because you could find some great virtual tours on the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, the Investology, which is, it's coming. It's going to be there soon. You could sign up if you are interested there in Investology, at least to get some information on when it's available and what it's going to be comprised of. It can be very cool, much lower minimums, et cetera, as well as a very diversified approach. Very cool technology that's going to be involved in that. You're going to really enjoy that. We'll have more coming on that. For now, have a great week. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.